Good morning, everybody. Happy Wednesday. We've reached November. It was November last week, I guess, but it makes me happy. Although it's, again, bizarrely warm. Very bizarre.
Well, does it get cold in the UK in November?
Yes.
Well, yes. There you go.
The weather yesterday was kind of like the UK summer in terms of temperature, so...
Okay.
Yeah, November. So, for context, our 16-year-old went to school in shorts yesterday. I, growing up in the UK, had maybe a 2-week period in the height of summer where I could wear shorts and spent the rest of the year in trousers.
Trousers.
Anyway, hi, I'm Megan. The delightful man with me is Joshua. You know who we are. If you're listening to this, because this is a patron-only thing. And
unfortunately, you know who we are.
Well,
yeah. Sorry. This constant self-deprecation, I guess it's just...
It's why we love you. It is why we love you. What updates do we have this week, Joshua?
Well, you are going on tonight with...
I am. Yep, tonight I'll be on with Canadian atheist, the lovely Michael, who are going to talk about Sumerian and the most recent book and all of those exciting things. Possibly may also mention BahaCon, because I believe Michael is running it this year, or helping to run it this year.
I think he's part of the...
And I will be going, which is very exciting.
It is. It's a lot of fun, actually. They do it really well.
I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be...
You will be very popular.
It's going to be good, I think.
I don't know if our patrons heard, but I just don't remember if I mentioned it, given that my memory is... totally amazing on this sort of thing, but when I was at BahaCon, a woman did I mention this in the early streams?
I don't remember. Came up to
me. A woman came up to me and she said, I remember where I know you from. And I kind of inside sort of straightened up a little, oh, cool, somebody else that, another fan, and she said, you're Megan Lewis's husband. That is true.
Very bizarre to me.
I mean, it's not, though.
Well, that's very sweet of you.
I'm a very, very lucky man.
I'm talking to Michael this evening. I think it'll be released on Thursday.
Usually. I don't think it's a set day, but
so that's going to be fun and exciting. And I am currently putting the finishing touches to a Sumerian language video.
Yeah.
Which is
amazing.
is ancient Sumerian in 5 minutes or less. Obviously not all of ancient Sumerian, but one of the things I've been really wanting to get back to for 3 years now is making videos for the channel. I'm sure everyone will have noticed there's not been an awful lot of them lately. I've managed to do some interviews, but not a lot of those, and nothing in the way of edited stuff. And I have a whole list of video ideas of stuff that I want to do and talk about, and I'm finally trying to get back to it. So I'll actually be uploading a preview of that Patreon later today, so you all can take a look at it. But 5 minutes or less is manageable for me at the moment.
And it's, I'm sure that I have some bias somewhere, but yeah. Oh my God, it's so good. So Megan has been working with that that little animated character that she created, and you will be joyfully surprised at what she's done with it. It's it's amazing.
It's been really fun.
And you just edited it so well.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm a fan. I have been working.
Yep.
On the scripts for the second season of our Sumerian video series.
Yes.
So I'm almost through the first video. I was working on it yesterday.
Nice. I didn't know you'd go that far.
Yeah. I'll send you the. I'll send you the draft.
For those who are unfamiliar, we started our Sumerian language teaching journey, if we're calling it that, with a set of videos that kind of inspired the first book. And now we've written the second book and it's out and available. We wanted to do videos to accompany it so that people who find it helpful to have both media have access to both of them. The videos don't have... Sorry, honey, you first.
No, go ahead. I thought you were
going. Oh, no. I was just going to say that the videos don't have all of the information that the book has. We're not going to be putting the exercises in. And they will be formatted slightly differently, obviously, because they're a book. They're a video and not a book chapter. But it'll contain most of the relevant information, the linguistic, grammatical information. So we're going to get those done as well.
But, like, it's just funny to me. This has happened a couple of times. Actually, I think it was both with this Learn to Read Sumerian. I remember we put out that first series of videos, and like I'm teaching them using this like goofy PowerPoint, you know, and I'm just sort of rambling as I'm teaching.
There are like 12 comments on the first video of this starts at 10 minutes in.
Oh yeah, I mean, and like talk less. I open so for a classroom setting, I think it would be really good.
Absolutely.
Because I open with, you know, like, welcome to Sumerian. Listen, Sumerian is a great language to learn. Let me tell you a funny story. And actually, this is a funny story if you guys haven't heard it. Because I get on Discord and Clubhouse quite frequently. Usually just to listen, like this story, there's a meme that I created based on a scene from the show Brooklyn Nine-Nine, where the character who is sort of the know-it-all takes a teaching position as a sergeant, and she gets a student who is a know-it-all, just like she is. And so she comes in and to her friends and says, I've got this new recruit and he won't shut up and he keeps, you know, giving me all these brilliant solutions, you know, quote unquote brilliant solutions to all these, you know, really difficult problems that we all face, and you know, and it just keeps talking, and her friend says, oh, you got an Amy, which is, you know, her name. The know-it-all's name. Anyway, that was probably a really roundabout way of describing that, but I changed it to say essentially the same thing in the top, and then it says, oh, you got a first-year seminary student.
So true.
Yeah, first-year seminary students, and I feel comfortable saying this because I was one. There's nothing we don't know, right? We know everything. And so I was teaching I was filling in, teaching a Greek class, because I normally taught the Hebrew cycle. But a friend of mine that was teaching the Greek class couldn't make it, so it was it was a review class. Sorry, everybody. That was horrible. And as I was standing up at the board, and I had my back to the class, and I was writing some exercises up on the board before class started, and these two guys were down front. And the one guy said to the other, now these guys have had enough Greek. They know what nouns
enough
are.
To be dangerous.
I don't even know if they knew that much. but like, they knew nouns mostly. And they knew like a couple of basic verbal forms, and some particles and some prepositions. I mean, just like, you know, they're halfway through their first semester. And they're sitting there, and one guy says to the other, "And so the Greek in Romans chapter 9 makes it very clear that God predestines everyone to either hell or to heaven." And the other guy says, no, the Greek is, it's incredibly clear that the Armenian position is actually the correct one. And I always say, I wanted to turn around and like slap him in the back of the head and just say, just shut up, you know, just shut up and listen. Neither of you know enough Greek to make any kind of a statement like that. You know, just be patient. But you're a first year seminary student, so you know everything. And so I was telling that story, and as you can tell, it didn't take 4 seconds to tell it. And so people are like, get to the lesson, get to the lesson in the video.
You're like, no, this is relevant. Yeah, this was before either of us really knew how YouTube worked.
But I mean, like, for the longest time, if not still, it was by a long margin, a wide margin, most viewed video on the channel. So I did want to bring up something interesting. I was having a conversation yesterday about, I think, Ezekiel 26 and prophecy against Tyre, which, if you guys listening don't know, we've got a video about it. I think several videos about it on the channel, and I've done interviews on it. And of course, there's a chapter in volume 2 of the Atheist Handbook about it. But they were looking for a topic of conversation in this room that I was listening to. And so I picked up my phone and flipped it on and went to the chat area and put a meme in that I made. It's that guy sitting at a table that says, like, prove me wrong or something, or change my mind. I think it's what it says, change my mind. And, I, you know, you can, like, fill in what you want. And I said, you know, Ezekiel 26 is a failed prophecy or something like that. Prove me wrong or change my mind. Anyway, so somebody responded pretty quickly with, you know, there's lots of, you know, there's no reason to talk about this because there's so much material out there showing that that's not true. And I just wrote with like a little smiley face, I'd love to see it. Of course, no information was forthcoming, but that did lead to, you know, me saying, I have videos and a chapter about this. And somebody chimed in and said, I have a PDF of that book. Would you like it? Free.
What?
Yeah. And,
oh, wow.
And the guy that I was talking to responded and said, well, only if he's okay with that. You know, I don't want to take away, you know, like paying him for his efforts. And the guy that offered it said, oh, Dr. Josh, I didn't realize that was you. Sorry.
Wow.
And so he messaged me. He's a friend of mine. He messaged me privately, and he said, "I'm sorry, I get in the habit of if I have a book or something that people are interested in, I want them to have that information. So it's just sort of a reflex." And I wrote, "Oh my God, don't worry about it." But I commented in the group chat that basically what we normally say about this since it became an issue. So Megan, why don't you, since I've been yammering on, why don't you tell them about like that Twitter post, whoever it was that was like, that would share out books regularly, which was really nice, right? But then, yeah, go ahead.
I don't know what you're
I'm sorry. So to. Then, okay, sorry. I'm trying to get you to talk so that they don't have to just listen to my goofy
ass. Oh, no, I have things that I'll bring up in a minute.
Oh.
Thank you.
Sorry. So there was a Twitter post where there was somebody that always shared Sumerian content, like a new Sumerian article came out in the paper, or, you know, Sumerian find ancient Sumerian. And we got kind of excited because here's our book, but it was a link to a pirated website, you know, where you could get a free copy of it. And, you know, academic publishing, as everybody probably knows, is a complicated thing because it's very, very expensive for many of these books. And so, like, Brill or some of these other publishers will make electronic copies sometimes publicly available. And I guess Megan and I have kind of been of two minds about this with our books, right? Because they always end up on the pirated websites. And even there are YouTube channels where they somehow turn the audio or turn the text file into like computer generated thing, and they make this kind of difficult to listen to audiobook version of our books. But I'm kind of two minds about it, because on the one hand, the whole reason that I go online is so that people can get this information. And so I, more people getting it, even if they're getting it for free, still feels good to me. Of course, on the other hand, this is part of our income, because we publish these books, and it's a...
And I should add that academic publishing typically doesn't pay the authors terribly well. Yes. You might get like a royalty share or an initial payment, but it's not
like, I can quantify that.
Writers of academic books are not getting their main income from book sales in the same way that novelists do. Josh, go.
If I could just give a quick example of it, Glenn Schwartz, the former chair of our department at Hopkins, wrote a book that is like a staple in Mesopotamian archaeology. And it's just a brilliant book. And I asked him one year, like, "Oh man, you know," because he mentioned that he got his royalty check from the publisher. And I said, "Man, you must be rolling in it." And he said, "I think I got 85 cents this year." So,
which is yes,
it's not because the book's not selling.
No, it's not. And this is one of the reasons why we decided to self-publish, because we don't. So one of the reasons that academic presses are able to do this is because typically people writing for academic presses have research positions elsewhere that provide them with a salary. And especially if you're at a research institution, writing is part of your job. So they will give you time for, like, they'll give you sabbaticals every so often for writing projects. you might be given research time during the week. We don't have that. Right. Whatever time we spend researching and writing is time that we have to fund ourselves, which is why we self-published, because we do need to be paid for that time and for that effort and for that research. And a university isn't going to be doing it, so we need the books to do it.
Yeah. And what's crazy is that, like, we don't have library access anymore. Like, we could probably drive the hour and 40 minutes up to Hopkins. And I'm assuming we could still get in. But, like, it used, you know, libraries, now academic libraries, we used to, when we were there, you obviously could access the electronic resources, and you could actually request, which is, this was the best feature. You could say, oh my gosh, I need this article from, the AOS journal. And you could just type a request in to the library, and the library within a couple of days would send someone down to make a PDF, to go scan and make a PDF of that article and email it to you. We just don't have that anymore. We just don't have access. So, like, when a new, Oxford handbook,
and it's not even that we don't have anyone able to make a PDF for us. It's that we cannot physically or digitally access that information, because even though we pay for a JSTOR membership, which is a journal repository, we pay for a personal membership for that. It doesn't give you full access to everything that you need access to, because that is restricted to institutional memberships, which are several hundred thousand dollars a year, which obviously is a little bit beyond what we can afford.
Yeah. And, like, I have a friend, that works at a Tyndale. And so I'll periodically ask him. But I mean, like, after a while, I've been on the receiving end of that. Hey, can you request this article? You don't, the friendship will end very quickly if you utilize that in any consistent way. So, like, we've been in contact with trying to find out if there's a way that we could get, like, honorary membership or something, or access. But what that means is, like, I was looking yesterday at these new Cambridge Companion volumes, our Oxford handbooks, when they come out, like, to purchase them, it's $100 a pop. There are German commentaries that I've just got to get a look at. I'm working on 1 Samuel 15, and Dietrich has the main commentary on it. It's $347. It's a different world out here in that respect. So anyway, with all of that being said,
I was going to say, all of this is to say that we do offer our work for free for those who can't afford it, but there's a significant difference between someone scanning and uploading our work. Like, our most expensive book is what, 60?
Yeah, the hardcover version.
The hardcover of the Atheist Handbook. The Slavery Book is, yeah. So, like, $55, $60. And they're all on the Kindle for $10.
Yeah, that's right.
So there's a difference between that, and added in there the fact that actually book sales make up a significant portion of our personal income. When you compare it to academic presses that are charging a couple of hundred dollars per book and returning almost none of that to the authors. I feel a little differently about that kind of thing. That this took a very unexpected turn.
Sorry.
No, it wasn't a criticism. Just a statement of fact.
A SOF.
Exactly.
Stop.
Exactly. So we should wrap up because I think you'll probably record this while Josh is driving to work, and it sounds like he has arrived.
I have.
But I've uploaded that Sumerian grammar video to Patreon for those who are interested. It will be on YouTube on Friday. And I'm going to be working on the next one.
You're so incredible.
You're incredible. This week. And yeah, we'll see you all back here. Oh, you're a nice man.
You're just amazing. And you guys will all know what I'm talking about when you see it. You'll be like, I'm so proud of her.
And we will see you back here next week. And I've been meaning to say, if anyone has any questions that they've been meaning to ask Josh or I, just pop them in the comments.
Yeah.
And we will maybe start using this time to answer patron questions.
Are you trying to say that I ramble? This is a shot at me.
I mean, I wasn't trying to. There is nothing wrong with a good ramble.
There's something wrong with it.
Nope. Nothing. Okay, you go to work. Everybody, all right. Thank you for listening. We will see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.